What is up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me, episode 26. Welcome back to the podcast, Frank Nivinnik of Hatebreed. This will be a part two for him. And also, I talked to Yancey Turner at the end of this podcast. This is going to be my Super Bowl 50 preview episode. So we've got Frank Nivinnik for the Broncos, and then we've got Yancey Turner for the Carolina Panthers. This is definitely a fun podcast. Great to catch up with Frank. He also talks about going to see the new Star Wars, and also gives us some lowdown on the new Hatebreed record that I know everyone is cannot wait to hear, including myself. So yeah, it was definitely a fun episode to put together for everybody, and hopefully you guys enjoy it too. First off, I want to get to a few things before we get to the Frank Nivinnik interview. Definitely have to talk about the DeLorean coming back, and if anyone knows me, knows that I absolutely need a DeLorean in my life. So, if you're going to support the podcast, from now on, all monies are going to go towards a DeLorean. Judging by the rate of money coming into the podcast, I'll have a DeLorean roughly 2037. So, if you want to support the podcast, go to paypal.me/talktome. And like I said, all monies from here on out will go towards my DeLorean. No, but really, they're going to go towards production cost of the podcast. And all donations are welcome. Still got the t-shirts coming. Keep hearing word that they're coming soon. And they're going to be fantastic. And you guys are going to enjoy the Talk To Me t-shirts and be able to get those for yourself and for your loved ones. Hopefully we can have those ready by Valentine's Day, because those will make the perfect Valentine's Day gift for the loved one in your life, is a Talk To Me t-shirt. But also want to get to the matter at hand. And I know that if you're a longtime listener of this podcast, you know, kind of went back and listened to old episodes, you know that I used to use Cowboys From Hell as a huge part of my podcast. And I have many, many times over the episodes confessed my love of Pantera. And with Phil coming out of the Dime Bash and screaming white power at the end, you know, the video clearly shows that he is screaming it. There's not a smirk or a smile on his face. And it's pretty sad that my all-time favorite band has come down to this. I mean, can you truly like the band and hate the person? And can you constantly overlook the remarks and continue to brush it off to just Phil being Phil? Because back in the 90s, it was hilarious when he would get on stage and, you know, tell the crowd to smoke acid and then talk about dragons coming out of the PA. And you just look at all that and you go back and you're just like, you just knew he was going to do something stupid like this at some part, you know, some point in his career and his life, to kind of tarnish the legacy of the band. And I know in the late 90s, they started, you know, incorporating the Confederate flag. And even when Doc Coyle was on the podcast, we talked about that, you know, the use of the Confederate flag and kind of the racist undertones of the Confederate flag. And, you know, you can kind of overlook that. You know, I grew up in the South and I see the Confederate flag often, so it's not something that just strikes me as overly racist. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, claim heritage and not hatred and all that nonsense. And, you know, maybe we can't overlook it that much longer. But it's definitely a sad time, and it's, you know, plus it was a Dimebag, you know, memorial show where you can't go into that, and, you know, you go there having to have a good time, and you basically come out, you know, just with this nonsense of Phil screaming white power, and you've got everyone in the crowd just dumbfounded. And I'm actually surprised it took this long for that video to come out. You know, with all the, you know, if you see pictures of the show, there's just cameras everywhere and just, you know, video cameras and cell phone cameras and everything just aimed at the stage. So how that wasn't just blasted the second that event was over, it just blows my mind, because you know that everyone had that on their camera, and it took one brave individual to put that up on YouTube for the world to see. And with that, you know, with that, you get the Rob Flynn video, which I think, you know, it almost brought me to tears. And just, you know, the whole situation just brings me down, because it's a band that I've loved, you know, since I was in my teenage years. And I went to see, you know, at least 12 times over the years, and saw Pantera in so many different venues and so many different states. And, you know, every time just, you know, absolutely just loving every moment of it. And you get up there and Phil's up there just, you know, he was incoherent towards the end of Pantera. You know, he was so whacked out on drugs that, you know, you had no idea what he was talking about, and he was stumbling around the stage. And, you know, Pantera were known to have their good times and drink their drinks and drink their beers and their black tooths and everything else. And, you know, you get Phil up there just blabbing about nothing. And, you know, it was funny and it was fun at the time. And you know, he's the type of person too that is just going to mouth off and, you know, say something stupid to a crowd of people and, you know, to scream white power at a group of people and try to play it off as it's because you're drinking white wine is just absolutely ridiculous. So I think in my assessment of the situation, I truly can enjoy the band and enjoy the legacy that Dimebag left behind. It's just a sad day. It's truly a sad, sad day, sad time. I don't think this is a, you know, internet outrage. You know, this is a, something that's been brewing with Phil, and, you know, his apology video, you know, he's almost in tears because he just knows he's just completely fucked up. Sad, sad day. But I will say the saddest, you know, like I said, the saddest part of this whole thing that it was done at a Dimebag concert celebrating the life of Dimebag, and it has soured the fans of the band, and, you know, something that Dime poured his heart and soul into, you know, I'm definitely not going to let it affect me when I listen to the band Pantera, but it's definitely affected me with the man that Phil Anselmo is. But let's get into the podcast at hand with Frank Novinick of Hatebreed, and we've got Yancey Turner at the end of this podcast from Parish Lane, and I've got some music from Parish Lane coming on at the end of this podcast. So hopefully you guys are ready to talk Super Bowl 50, Broncos, Panthers. You guys definitely have to hit me up on Twitter at TalkToMeTalk, on Facebook.com/TalkToMeTalk, or you can even email me if you want to at TalkToMeTalk@gmail.com. Give me your picks for Super Bowl 50. I'll give you my pick at the end of this podcast, and hopefully you guys enjoy every moment of this podcast. And up first, we've got Frank Novinick. So here you go.
What's going on?
Not much, man. How you been?
Not too bad.
Good, good. I'm sure you're on cloud nine right now, still with the game yesterday.
Yeah, as much as I am, I'm very, you know, today's a new day, and you know, the harsh reality of the tall order that's facing the Broncos in 13 days is it's a bit much because that team is just like nothing I've seen in a long time, so...
Yeah, it's a pretty insane team. I mean, obviously the Titans aren't any good, but, you know, when we played them earlier this year, I mean, they, you know, they were everything that they were, you know, billed to be, so.
Yeah, I just can't get over, I mean, I was a doubter up until the very bloody end with that team, and at this point, how can you doubt what they've done, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, pretty amazing team. I mean, the one thing, you know, I do appreciate about the Carolina Panthers is the, you know, when they give the kids the ball, like, that's about the only thing that, I know they're having fun out there and all that stuff, but, you know, that's the one thing that truly stands out to me is, you know, their camaraderie with the kids, but they're a little bit much, you know, with all the shenanigans with the first down dances and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what can you do? I mean, they walk the walk, though. I mean, you know, aside from talking the talk, so...
Take me back to yesterday, though. I mean, how were you feeling yesterday throughout the game?
I had about 6 heart attacks, I would say. But, you know, I'm so passionate about it that I wasn't going to be in public. I can't be in public for that. So, you know, I have to stay at home and I won't even be watching it without anybody other than like my close people here. You know, I won't even watch that with friends or anything. So I had my son with me. My girl was at work and, we were yelling a lot and freaking out the cat and dog and, the neighbors too, I'm sure. So, you know, we had the game on with the crank through the house speakers, which we just hooked up yesterday cause I'm moving right now. So, you know, it was just, we couldn't have played a better game, really. I mean, the defense was unbelievable yesterday. I mean, like, we've had some games where it was like, all right, you know, the Pittsburgh game, they ran all over us. And I'm not talking about the one that we played against them a couple weeks ago. I'm talking about, you know, in the regular season not too long ago. when they just ran all over us. And you know, to take Brady down 20 sometimes was what they did yesterday. I mean, that was – he was getting his butt kicked out there so bad. I mean, you watch the highlights, and it's like that dude got destroyed yesterday.
Yeah, I couldn't believe Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware just off the ball. Just, you know, they were already in the backfield. It was insane.
All day, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, it came down to the end of the game, you know. Yeah. And had their kicker hadn't missed that you know, extra point at the beginning of the game, we might be sitting somewhere else right now. But, you know, that's it is what it is. You know, I mean, obviously there's a lot of what ifs and coulda, shoulda, wouldas throughout the game of any game. You know, I kind of was hoping that we were going to punch in 7 there at the end, and we only did 3. You know, I was telling my son, I said, you know, it could be 24-12 right now. We could be sitting pretty in this game, could be pretty much out of reach, but here's what we're dealing with, you know. And they were going for it on 4th down, what, 3 or 4 times in the 4th quarter, the Patriots were. And, you know, when he converted that catch to Gronkowski and made it a 2-point game on 4th down, I'm like, you have to be kidding me, you know. But thank God the defense stepped up one more time and put the pressure on him to get rid of the ball. And, you know, he had Gronkowski open in the end zone heading towards the sideline, but he just didn't get the ball to him for whatever reason to see him in time. Because if he did, it would have tied the game, and maybe we would have a different outcome. But fortunately for the Broncos fans and myself, obviously it didn't turn out that way.
Right. Yeah, with really no dog in the fight. I mean, I got some family that are Broncos fans, and, you know, just the universal hate for the Patriots. You know, that was probably one of my favorite games I've watched beginning to end that didn't involve my team yesterday. So, I mean, you know, if the Super Bowl can hold up to that game yesterday, you know, it's going to be a good game.
Well, I hope so. But at the same time, I mean, I hate to say it, I could see us losing by 24 points or something like that. You know what I mean? It's just because the nature of the beast is Carolina has a sick defense, you know, that people just talk about Cam and all that. But their defense, I mean, they faced the number one offense in football yesterday and demolished them. So I think the Super Bowl is going to come down for the Broncos. Their keys to the game are going to be the offense is going to need to score and score often to have a chance. That's what's going to be because, you know, the run threat that Carolina poses with their running backs and Cam Newton running the ball all the time is something that we haven't dealt with a lot. So, you know, you have to take that in consideration. And obviously we have to do a mistake-free. And one thing that I can say about Manning is he hasn't thrown the interceptions the last 2 weeks, which he's done in every game that he played this year, aside from those games. So, you know, I think that that's going to be the key for the Broncos to win is to get points and have the offense be present and not make any mistakes. Other than that, I think that it's going to be real hard for them to win. We're already 4.5-point dogs, I see, so... You know, we'll see. But another good thing about Denver is a lot of those players have Super Bowl experience and have been at the game, even though a lot of them were there when we got demolished by Seattle. But, you know, you can't say that for
Carolina.
You can't say that for Carolina, no.
So, with, you know, I know you watch every game, every Broncos game this year passionately. You know, just kind of give us a synopsis of kind of how Manning has looked when he was in the games this year. Do you think hopefully he rides out in the sunset, or if this is, you know, he's going to play a couple more years from what you see?
Again, it's going to have to depend on what happens in the Super Bowl. I think if he wins, he's definitely done, you know. And I think that if he doesn't win, then there's a good chance he's still done. But, you know, I think you still have that slim chance that he returns, knowing how good the team is, and hopefully can return the Broncos would be able to return to the status that they are this year. You know, this is the first time that the Broncos have had the number one defense in football. Ever.
Wow.
So, you know, this is a different team. So, you know, obviously I think that, you know, if we don't win the game and I have a lot to think about, but he's already the oldest quarterback to start the Super Bowl, and second to him was Elway, who's 38 when he won his last one, and then next down on that is Manny again when he did play 2 years ago. So, you know, 39 years old, and here he is. So, you know, obviously he's had his fair share of injuries, and he's had a serious, surgery with his neck. And but I will say this. I mean, he I watched all the games. He looked really bad this year. He was throwing. He still leads the league in interceptions, and he played, what, almost half the season? So that's saying a lot, and not in a good way. But, he just wasn't himself. You know, you see him throwing the ball up there, and it's like just some floater and up for grabs. And he knew something was going on. I mean, you know, obviously he's not going to be the guy he was in his prime when he played for Indy, or even when he came and was – smashing records in his first couple of years with us. But, the injuries in his foot and Father Time, a combination of the two, have caught up with him, and they caught up with him. And they, you know, it is what it is. I mean, we needed a decent game out of him yesterday when we got it, and surely we need another one in 13 days. So, but, you know, we'll see. You know, in a perfect world, Super Bowl 50, Peyton Manning wins and walks out to the sunset. How many people want that? A lot. Probably everybody besides people that live in Carolina.
Right.
In North Carolina, that is, too, you know. So I just, you know, I think that, you know, unfortunately, that's not the way it works. If it was, Charles Barkley would have a ring, Dan Marino would have a ring, and the list goes on. So I don't buy into that, you know. But I wish it was true. It's we're going to have to play and win the game and play a hell of a game against them. But it'll be interesting because it's, you know, it's just these are two teams that don't see each other. These are two completely different style of teams. You know, they're a very fast team. Obviously, our defense is fast, but Carolina is a very fast team, and it's one of those weird ones where it's not like. We're playing the Chargers in the Super Bowl or the Raiders in the Super Bowl, even the Patriots in the Super Bowl, teams that we played 2-3 times or whatever this year. It's not like that. This is some other beast in another conference, and then we're going after them, and we're the number one seed in our, you know, in the AFC, and they're the number one seed in the NFC. So, right. So be it. And yesterday it was 1-2 in the AFC and NFC as well. So it is what it is, you know. I also, you know, going back to talking about seeds and stuff, I kind of also feel that the Broncos wouldn't be where they are, I don't think, if Miami doesn't beat New England in the last week of the playoffs and send us to the number one seed to host the playoffs, because the Patriots completely blew it and lost to Miami, and they lost home field advantage. You know, I kind of think that, judging by watching the game yesterday, I mean, they brought it down to the bloody end of the game yesterday in our house. Could you imagine if it was in Foxborough? So right. I think a lot of that we owe credit to Miami for knocking them off and us being able to get the home field throughout, because I think that was, home field, it means a lot, I think, especially when you're playing in Denver and you're dealing with the altitude and that as well, so, and the fans. So
does any part of you want Brock Osweiler to start this game, or is it just like Peyton Manning or bust?
There's no part in me that wants Brock Osweiler to start the game, even if Brock Osweiler is the better quarterback. I'd rather cash in my Super Bowl ticket for the Broncos being in the Super Bowl and put all my money on Manning than just letting him have that chance to win because he's earned it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The team's been amazing since he's been on it. And he deserves the right to play in it, obviously, for everything he's done in his career and not just for Denver. So, you know, and Brock Osweiler is a great quarterback, and he's a good kid, and I think he's got a good future in football. And he did nothing wrong when he got pulled from that game. None of those turnovers were his fault. But, you know, the way the cookie crumbles is they needed a spark. They put in Manning. It worked, and it's been working since then. Manning's also a lot better health than he was in. He's not, you know, he was, you know, that game that he came in and played in the second half, that was the first game that he was able to play again. I mean, he was the backup for that day. Just, you know, that was his first game back. So he was the backup for that day. He got in, he was okay enough to play, his foot is healed or whatever. And I'm sure he needs all these 2 weeks to, you know, get his body and get his, you know, his rest. The dude's 39. So I absolutely think that Peyton should be given the chance, you know. And I know a lot of people were like, oh, even, you know, before yesterday, well, they have a better chance with Brock. Well, we don't know that. We beat the Patriots. You know what I mean? It was a hell of a game, and a lot of people didn't give the Patriots a chance. Certainly ESPN, I mean, give the Broncos a chance. ESPN never does because they're completely up the Patriots' ass because they're right there in Connecticut. And, you know, I could tell you firsthand that they are. And you know, Vegas, 85% of the money was on the Patriots, and we were underdogs in our own house. You know, we beat them with Peyton Manning. So what can you say? I mean, you can talk about Brock Osweiler all you want, but Manning hasn't thrown an interception in the last two games. So, and his numbers were a hell of a lot better than Brady's yesterday. Sure, Von Miller had a lot to do with that, but what are you going to say? Tell me that Brock Osweiler is supposed to play. I don't buy it, you know?
I mean, yeah, hopefully everything comes together, and then Peyton, you know, Peyton goes out with his ring. Obviously, you know, he spent most of his career in Indianapolis as a huge rivalry to the Titans. And, you know, back then I could care less for him, but, you know, now that he's out of the conference or out of the division, you know, I can truly embrace his greatness. And, I hope he does go out on top. I hope he does go out like Elway and right off into the sunset, you know, straight into the Titans front office. But, you know, that's for another day.
Well, I mean, are you a Volunteers fan?
I'm not actually. I'm a Louisville Cardinals fan.
Okay. Okay, well then that goes and shows why you don't care about Manning even more. So
right. No, it was funny. It was that, you know, that just to kind of go back, but I mean, you know, then when the Titans came to town, that was roughly Peyton's, you know, senior season. So it was, you know, Tennessee still really didn't have a pro football team, and so when he went to Indianapolis, I mean, there was a ton of people in Tennessee that became Colts fans. So that, you know, there are still Colts fans in Tennessee that for some reason, you know, changed to the Broncos, but there's a lot of Colts fans in Tennessee that, you know, still don't even embrace the Titans. So it's pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, a lot of kids named Colt and Peyton and running around Tennessee right now. So. All right, man. So, how's the new Hatebreed record coming along? I know you guys are done tracking, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's being mixed right now, and, it's awesome. You know, It's really coming together, and, it's very similar to what I would consider the last record.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel a Hatebreed is at the point where, you know, we've crossed over into not just the hardcore scene, but into other genres of metal and even rock, if you will. And there's, you know, some punk influence there always has been, at least in the attitude anyway, and you know, I think that when we make a record, we have to consider all these things. So, you know, it's a very hard thing to do to make a record that's going to make us happy and make everybody that's fans of the band now happy and have it still sound fresh and still have it still sound like Hatebreed at the end of the day. It really is not as easy as you guys might think, but no, it's good. I mean, it's heavy. The mixing. The mixings that I've heard so far are very brutal, and it's what you would expect for sure. In the vein of the last record. So
coming out early April, correct?
Supposed to. We're dealing with Nuclear Blast again, and they've been awesome, and obviously their roster is stacked.
Yeah.
For sure. They did us pretty good on this last one, so we decided to mess with them again. So, we're looking forward to it because obviously it's been a long time since the last record has came out. So,
and then touring plans are with Devil You Know and Devil Driver, the Devil Tour.
Yeah, and a band called Active Defiance is on that as well, and that's the U.S. leg, and we're going to Europe before that. We're supposed to be in Australia right now, but for those of you that know about the Soundwave Festival that's going on for the last 12 years, the guy decided to pull the plug on the festival and 35 days before the show. So a lot of flights were booked and a lot of things were planned and a lot of unhappy bands and people that work for the tour. And obviously you can imagine the how a lot of people's worlds were flipped upside down by that. But it sucks because, you know, that's like the big festival for heavy music in Australia. And we were glad to be back on it. It had been a couple of years. It was a few years, and we were on the main stage, so we were really excited about it. And actually landed, had a festival in New Zealand as well to play with NoFX and Refused. And all that got squashed. So that made this break home even longer than it is. And you know, unfortunately, we're not in Australia right now. And our next shows are in April in Europe. And then we jump from that after that. And I think that's like 10 shows. And then a couple days after that, we start the tour in the States. And then I know that we'll probably be hitting markets between now and the end of the year. Well, between the end of that tour and the end of the year, probably a few markets in the States, I would imagine we would hit that we're not, you know, you have to play all the cities that you haven't played. So, I mean, it's, you know, everybody be patient because we're going to go everywhere for sure. You know, sooner or later we will play in your city. So if it's not on this is just the first tour of the album cycle, and God knows how many we do on per album. So we'll be there eventually. So I know that Florida and Michigan were the big two complainers of the most. And obviously, you know, we have deep roots in Michigan, and Florida is a very large state. And they were a little upset that they weren't added to these shows. But, you know, again, it'll only be a matter of time till we hit the cities that were not on this one. So
I know everybody's definitely looking forward to it. Definitely looking forward to the new Hatebreed album. And I got one more question for you. And since I have you on the line, and I was actually going to reach out to you a few episodes ago, I had the Star Wars Force Awakens episode where I had a few past guests come on and, you know, give us their reviews of Star Wars. And I've noticed from your Facebook, you know, posts and your pictures and stuff, you went to an amazing premiere of Star Wars. So just kind of give me a quick synopsis of that for me.
Well, you know, it's no secret that I'm a big Disney fan, and I'm down here near Orlando, so I spend a lot of time at Disney World, and obviously they were going to do something special for it, and they did at the AMC movie theater in downtown Disney. They had a premiere night with the red carpet, and, you know, we booked these tickets months in advance, and I think it was $100 a person or something, and then, you know, you go, and we're taking our pictures on the red carpet and all this stuff. And then we get to go the night before. And then after that, they give you, they had a party at Hollywood Studios strictly for those people that were jumped aboard to do so. So, you know, we were at Hollywood Studios on a Thursday night until 2 o'clock in the morning. So that was pretty interesting. And it was all Star Wars'd up anyway. And they had a Star Wars fireworks thing, and, you know, it was cool, you know, and they gave us a bag of goodies and memorabilia stuff. So it was cool, just something a little bit different than just going to the movie and being tied in with Disney. And we're fortunate enough to be down here to experience something like that as opposed to, you know, some people just were able to go see the movie and that was it. You know, and I understand that's what some people want to do, but when you go to the grocery store, you can, if you want filet mignon, you can get that. If you want fucking strip steak, you can get that. You not to sound like Paul Stanley and make up stupid analogies, but, you know, that's what it is, you know, and we were able to go do that. And my son is really big into Star Wars. So to me, more than anything, it was cool to have him be able to experience it because he's, you know, he's been living on a little island in Hawaii for the last decade. So he's, you know, he's here now where there's more cool things going on than just, you know, whatever was going on out there. But no, it was fun and we had a good time. The movie itself, I liked that they brought back some of the old characters and the old ships and stuff. And it was cool. You know, we were there over 2 hours. I think the movie is right. So, you know, I didn't get bored at any point. I thought that the main villain was a bit of a goof once he took his mask off and he had his big ears. I was like, Han Solo's going to get killed by this big-eared goof? Are you kidding me? I was like, who is this kid? He looks like Nick Simmons or something to me. I was disappointed when he took his helmet off. And
yeah, my first thought to my buddy when we were leaving the theater, I looked at him. I was like, man, Andy Samberg made an awesome Kylo Ren, you know?
Right? That was it. I was like, I thought they could have came a better villain, but even with his costume on, it just didn't do too much for me. But other than that, I gave the movie 5 stars. I loved it, and you know, I enjoyed it. I did. You know, that was my only complaint really about it. You know,
but I will say that Kylo Ren probably has one of the coolest voices in cinematic history. Like when he has the mask on, like I loved the tone of his voice. It was, you know, very, you know, they put some work into it, I guess.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I'm not the biggest Star Wars nerd. You know, I watched all the movies. You know, I think it's cool, you know, but, you know, I just, it's funny because like I had to brush up on the newer ones on episode 1, 2, and 3 before we went. And when I did that, I realized that I hadn't ever seen episode 2 before. So I was like, wow, I was watching this with my girl and my kid, and I'm like, I've never seen this movie before. I was like, I don't know any of this stuff. And I was like, wow, I thought I did, and here I didn't, you know. So, you know, obviously I'm an older cat, and when the movies came out in the 70s, I was there. You know, I was in 1977, I was 6. So, you know, I got to see those all the first time around and experience that all the first time. So it's cool for my son, even though he's a little bit older than 6. Obviously, he's 20, but, you know, he gets to geek out on all of it now because it's, you know, you talk about how long the episode 4 came out to now, and they're still doing Star Wars. I mean, what is it, 40 years? You tell me. So, you know what I mean?
They're doing something, right?
40 years. So generations can enjoy it. So it's cool. It's cool like that, definitely.
Yeah, I take my daughter. She's 13, and she had never seen a Star Wars movie before. But I was like, after watching it the first time, I was like, I'm pretty sure you could see this movie without really, you know, knowing the Star Wars universe. You know the main characters like Luke and Leia just because they're pop culture icons. But, you know, as for the story, she didn't really know any of the old story. So I took her and we left, and, you know, all the way to the car, she's telling me how much she loved Rey and, you know, how she wanted to do her hair like that and, you know, all that stuff. So it was definitely a cool moment to be able to take the daughter to that and for her to enjoy it because, you know, she's into the One Direction and the, you know, Justin Bieber and, you know, not into Star Wars and sci-fi, you know, so it was fun to have a good time with her.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, that's the same thing. I spoke to a couple people who had never seen any of the movies before and went and still were able to enjoy it just like it was any old movie. So, you know, it has that element too. So it's cool. Now people can go back and check out the rest of them and educate themselves on Star Wars history, I guess.
Cool, Frank. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and, you know, just kind of going back to episode 3. I appreciate you taking a chance on me back then. Obviously, the podcast has grown and, you know, Blabbermouth's, you know, commenting on it and using it for site content and things like that. So it's definitely grown a lot since episode 3, and I just definitely appreciate you taking the time again today.
No problem. I wish you luck, and my pleasure, and we'll see what happens in the Super Bowl, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Yes, sir. All right. Have a good one, Frank.
You got it. Take it easy.
All right, guys, that was Frank Nivinnik of Hatebreed, the mighty Hatebreed, on the podcast for the second time. So when it came time to find a Carolina Panthers fan, you know, it definitely took me a minute. I had to scour the internet to find someone in a band that also enjoyed the Carolina Panthers. And I found a person in all of all places, Salt Lake City, Utah. So I reached out to Yancey Turner of Parrish Lane, and he agreed to come on the podcast, had a great, great conversation with Yancey. Hopefully you guys enjoy it, and then stick around after he gets done talking about the Carolina Panthers. We're going to hear some Parrish Lane, and then I'm going to give you my Super Bowl 50 picks and all that fun stuff. So here's Yancey Turner of Parrish Lane, straight out of Salt Lake City.
All right, man, so let's get into this Super Bowl 50 preview episode with, you know, you've got your Broncos coming up against your Carolina Panthers. So just tell me a little bit about what do you think the Carolina Panthers are going to do in the Super Bowl?
I think they're going to come out and they're going to try to get in Manning's head. Because, yes, they've got, you know, the Broncos have an amazing defense. Nobody can deny that. But I think if they get into Manning's head and the Panthers defense, which is, I think, ranked third or fourth. Anyway, if they can get into Manning's head and do to him what they did to Carson Palmer and the Cardinals, the Broncos defense isn't going to matter.
Right. Yeah. Actually, after watching the Patriots Broncos game, it was such a great game. And then the Panthers Cardinals game comes on and it's just a complete blowout by the Panthers. You're just like, I don't know, man. I don't see the Broncos, you know, holding having a chance in this game. So,
That's what I'm hoping. You know, as an NFL fan, if my team's not in it, I just want a good game.
Right.
In this one, I just want to see them blow the hell out of the Broncos.
just run them out of the field.
That's yeah.
So you're calling from Utah. So how does a Carolina Panthers fan end up in Utah?
Well, so when I started watching football, I became a Redskins fan because my brother was a Redskins fan, and that's who got me into football. And I hated telling that story. So back in 93, when they announced that they were bringing two new teams into the league, I just picked the one that I thought had the coolest logo and went with it. and that's pretty like lazy sounding way to pick a team, but really, you know, nobody can blame me or can call me a bandwagon jumper or any of that stuff. And it's been a long time, but it's finally paying off.
Right. So it's at Utah. I mean, that's still kind of Broncos country, isn't it? Like, aren't they pretty big out there?
Yeah, and that's just one more reason to hate them and the Raiders. Yeah, you know, because the Raiders, I think the Raiders are like 12 hours west of here, and you got the Broncos 8 hours east. So, yeah, all the more reason to hate both of those teams.
Nice. So, you know, you're living out there. Do you get to see every game, or you just get to see the games that are nationally televised?
Yeah, so I don't do the DirecTV thing, so I just every once in a while I get to catch a game. I think I got three this year is all.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, other than that, it's, you know, see highlights on ESPN or whatever.
Yeah, I'm an out-of-market fan myself watching my team, but I stepped up and got the, you know, I get the NFL Sunday ticket every week. But,
yeah.
So let's get back to your Panthers. You know, so with all the stuff around Cam Newton, my personal biggest problem with Cam Newton has nothing to do with race. I don't know. It has nothing to do with race. It basically just has to do with he's not on my team. You know, I sit there and said, I was like, you know, I can't stand it because he dances after every first down, does his little silly little dance after a first down and, you know, touchdowns. I think it's a little bit excessive. But if he was on my team, I would be doing that dance every single first down in my living room with him. So it's
absolutely.
So it's such a hard thing to say, but I mean, I think it's, you know, silly with all the race stuff coming out, but I mean, I think he does celebrate, you know, a little bit here and there, but you know.
See, and as a Panthers fan, this is my first year where I've really looked at him and said, God, I'm glad he's on my team.
Right.
Yes, he's a phenomenal athlete. Nobody can take anything like that away from him. But up until this year, he hadn't been, in my opinion, a quarterback.
Right.
This year, he's finally, like, his arm has come into play. His legs are coming into play. He's a complete player now, to me. And, yeah, I'm not a fan of his end zone celebrations myself. Actually, the end zone ones I'm okay with. It's the first downs.
Right.
It's the excessive nature, like you said. The thing I really do like, though, is that he's gone out of his way to, you know, give the ball to these little kids and everything. Like that's cool, and it kind of shows that he gets it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and realizes that, you know, the kids are the future of the NFL, and if they don't like it and if they don't get involved at a young age, there's a chance they might not.
Right. And, no, that's the one thing I talked with Frank was, you know, the one thing I do like about Cam Newton was the fact that, you know, he has gotten him and his entire team to, after every touchdown, go and give the football away to a little kid. And I think that's absolutely great.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and this is kind of like your Brett Favre's and your Hines Ward. Every time he gets hit and gets back up, he's smiling like he just enjoys playing the game. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost in football is they treat it like a job, and he's out there playing a game.
Yeah.
You know, and he gets that. And I think the fact that he is, and he acts the way that he does, I think that turns a lot of people off as well. And plus, like you said at the beginning there, he's not on their team, and so they hate that.
Right. Yeah, if he was, you know, leading my team to 15-1, like I said, I would be, you know, I'd be jumping up on the couch, dapping and you know, and doing touchdown dances and everything else through the house, you know.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely just comes back around to, you know, he's not on their team because I doubt that
right.
There aren't very many Carolina Panthers fans really care.
And that's the thing. I love watching it because that means that they're moving onward and upward.
In your assessment, you know, how did they were, what, 7-8-1 last year? And then, like, you know, they basically won a few down the stretch. And then, you know, when they came out just you know, gangbusters and ended up 15-1. In your opinion, what do you think the turnaround was?
Honestly, I don't know. I was one of the naysayers at the very beginning of the year when Kelvin Benjamin went down.
Yeah.
I thought for sure we were screwed, you know, because you look at that wide receiver core and it's a bunch of old dudes and a bunch of unknowns. Other than Greg Olsen, that's really, you know, the people were like, okay, yeah, Ted Ginn, he's old, washed up. Jericho Cotchery, he's old. Corey Brown, who the hell is that? You know, didn't have anything. So I think the turnaround was just, you know, finishing last year on that high note. And then just coming in this year, they knew what they were capable of. And, you know, they showed it, but then almost let a bunch of games go. So, I mean, really, I'm not going to say they're lucky to be 15-1, but they really kind of are, because they should have, they very easily could have lost to Green Bay.
Yeah.
Very easily could have lost to the Giants there towards the end of the season. Huge lead they let slip away. I think it's just, sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, they had the easiest easiest schedule in all of the NFL this year.
Right.
But they did with it what, you know, what they expect you to do with it. If you've got a great, easy schedule, then go through and destroy everybody, which they very easily could have. But, you know, and then that game against Atlanta where they lost, I think that was what they needed. I think they all let their egos get ahead of them and their heads get a little too big and they needed to be put back in check. And from that point on, they just went awesome.
So in your assessment coming up in the game, you know, that's coming up this Sunday, who would you say is maybe someone other than Cam to watch? Who's like your favorite Panther that's not Cam Newton?
Well, I love Jonathan Stewart.
Yeah.
Luke Kuechly.
Oh, yeah.
You can't say enough positive about that guy. And, you know, Greg Olsen, Norman, if he has the game, I'm hoping they put him on Demaryius Thomas all game just to, you know, kind of isolate him and get him out of the game. But, yeah, Jonathan Stewart and Luke Kuechly are the two, I think, once they have great games, it's going to be awesome. But the other one, and this is a hometown guy here, is Star Lotulelei
on the
defensive line. He went to the same high school I did, actually went to high school with my brother-in-law.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, then went up to University of Utah, and then headed off back east. So that's the other one that I really hope has a phenomenal game.
The old Utah Utes, right?
Absolutely. There have been a lot of Utah Utes on the Carolina Panthers. That's a nice thing.
That is true. So we'll just we'll wrap up the Super Bowl, and then we'll kind of talk about what's going on musically with you. But just, you know, give your warning shot across the bow to Frank Nivinnik of Hatebreed. What do you think the final score is going to be?
Final score, actually, as much as I'd like to see a blowout, I think it's going to be closer. You know, a 24-17 type thing. But in the end, Peyton Manning's going to have to take some Hatebreed lyrics into consideration as he wipes the tears from his eyes and loses yet another Super Bowl.
He might just destroy everything. You never know what he's going to do out there.
That's true.
Oh, man. But hopefully that's what, you know, for your sake, hopefully that's what Cam and the Panthers do, is they go out there and just destroy everything, right?
I think as long as they come out and don't go, as long as they don't go 3-and-out on their first drive, I think the Panthers will be just fine.
Wow. That's, if you screw it up on the first drive, you're done. Oh, man.
Well, not to say that they get in their heads. I just, you know, that the jitters, I guess, more than anything.
Well, I think with that defense, I mean, you know, if Peyton goes out there and kind of, I see him more dinking and dunking, you know, just kind of getting down the field. And if he can, you know, read defenses like he supposedly can and get out there and, you know, just know exactly what he's doing and know exactly what the Panthers are doing and just, you know, get the Broncos down the field. I don't see him like, you know, 90-yard bombs or anything anywhere in the game, but I think he can, you know, matriculate the ball down the field.
And that's another thing, like the game last week for the Broncos.
Yeah.
How the hell the Patriots let his tight end get that wide open all the time is beyond me, because the whole time he was in Indy, Dallas Clark was his safety net. You know, and so that's the other thing too, is, you know, they got to figure out how to take away that tight end, and they'll be just fine.
And with a name like Yancey, I mean, wouldn't you go like be a fan of like Yancey Thigpen and go back to like the Steelers with that?
The Steelers and the Titans, yeah. That's the other thing about Salt Lake is you've got four teams in the NFL that are highly represented here. You got Denver and the Raiders,
mm-hmm.
and you've got Dallas and the damn Steelers. How the Steelers, I do not know. But, yeah, so that was the other thing. And I remember when he was drafted, my boss was a huge Steelers fan.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, at least I got a player with a decent name out there now.
Yeah, when I saw your name pop up, I was like, I've never heard of a Yancey other than Yancey Thigpen. So.
Yep.
That's great.
It's a different one for sure.
Right, that's awesome. So tell me about the bands that you're in. I know you're in two separate bands. And just kind of give us a quick breakdown of those bands for all the listeners out there.
Band I'm in called Parish Lane. A little bit more on the metal side, but not like heavy stuff. Like Bullet for My Valentine. There's some Metallica influence in there, some Avenged Sevenfold influence. Stuff. It's really just good, solid rocking stuff. Putting out a new EP here at the end of March.
Nice.
Hopefully hitting the road. Who knows though with that stuff. That can be scary. And then another band I'm in called Par for the Curse. It's more heavy rock, 10 years, POD, Breaking Benjamin style stuff.
Okay.
Really good, melodic. Just like the first time I heard those guys, I was absolutely blown away because the band was formed by a bunch of dudes in like death metal bands. And they all just said, let's change it up a little bit. And like all these, they're all from four different death metal bands. And they all were just talking and saying, let's switch it up a little bit. And the guitarist wrote like, seven songs over the course of 2 weeks or something stupid like that. It was just, it came together so quick for them. And then they lost their drummer and hit me up and asked if I'd take his spot. So
what's it like touring out there? I mean, I know that in the years that I toured out in that area, I couldn't even imagine being like an unsigned, quote unquote, I don't want to call you a local band, but you know, an up and coming band, you know, trying to make those long treks out there. Cause I know that, you know, once you get past a certain point, I mean, you know, the next town, the next major city is 8 hours away, you know?
Yeah. That's the thing is, like I was saying earlier, from here to Denver is like an 8 hour drive. North of here into Idaho, which is just as barren as anything, you know, there's the first town you come to in Idaho that's worth a damn is, you know, 3 hours from here. Then you're 6 hours to Vegas. So yeah, like you said, it's long trips. And, you know, we did all right the last time we went into Idaho. We played to about 150 people. So I mean that's good. It makes the trip worth it, but it's not very what's the word? It doesn't really put a very optimistic look in your eyes because, you know, it's hard to establish yourself.
Right.
And that's the thing that I've heard is like back east and in the Midwest and stuff, towns are a lot closer and it's a lot easier. Or so I've heard, it's easier to establish yourselves because, you know, word travels to those closer cities a little closer and people are a little more willing to go if people from surrounding areas are telling them, hey, check these guys out. That's the beautiful thing about, you know, like Facebook now.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, I don't know how the hell two of us crossed paths because you're clear out there. I'm all the way over here. But, you know, you can get your name out a little bit wider with that and then, you know, and hopefully connect up with certain people who have some influence in other, you know, local markets and can hook up shows and network that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that, you know, I started touring in the late 90s, and it was obviously pre-MySpace. AOL Instant Messenger had kind of popped up, and I've told the story on the podcast before, but I booked my very first tour ever through AOL Instant Messenger by just going to, like, search profiles, and I would search bands like Korn and Limp Bizkit and in certain cities, and if they were fans of that band, I would just message them and be like, hey, you know, do you know your cool club in town? Do you know the cool band in town? Are you in a band? And 90, you know, half the time people have no idea what I was talking about. But a lot of times I would actually get, hey, you need to call my friend, da da da, and hook up that way. But then you would still have to mail off press kits and mail off burnt CDs and you know, wait 2 or 3 weeks for the person to get it. And yeah, it was a much different time, you know, starting out. And then, you know, obviously touring through MySpace and Facebook, you know, it's pretty insane, you know, the technology that people have at their hands these days.
And that's the thing, you know, I think it's made it so much easier now, but at the same time, I think the record industry and the, you know, the live music world has changed so much that it's, you know, yeah, it might be easier to get from town to town, but it's more difficult because you've got to do it yourself. And, you know, through the poor man tours, I guess you call them, you know, it's not like back in the 80s where if you had the look and you could hold a guitar, you were getting a record deal.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, even through the, you know, through the 90s and, you know, even early 2000s. But, you know, the record deals are few and far between now. You know, I actually went and bought the new Megadeth album, and I think that's the first CD that I've actually went and purchased in 10 years. I mean, you know, it was like, I think the last album I bought before that was like a Story of the Year album back in like the early 2000s, you know, so it's been a while, you know. It's through Spotify and Amazon Music and things like that. I mean, you really, you know, your record collection is pretty meek these days.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I've done so much stuff on iTunes. I went and saw Nothing More last year, about actually a year ago yesterday, and I was at the show and was talking to the bass player, and he saw me holding it in my hand, and he goes, "You're just barely buying that tonight?" And I'm like, "No, dude, I've had it ever since I downloaded it, but I figured I'd buy a copy of it here." I got that and Woven War the same night, you know, at the shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was weird to actually buy a physical CD.
I
haven't done it that much, which is really crazy. You know, as a musician, here I am saying, hey, buy my CD.
Right. Yeah. So, it's definitely a hard thing to sell because you're sitting there telling everyone else to do it. And then you forget that you need to be doing it too. So.
Yeah. So,
well, Yancy,
it's crazy, man.
I definitely appreciate it. And just let all the listeners out there kind of know where they can find you and then find, you know, your various projects on the aforementioned internet.
You can find the Parish Lane album on Spotify. And Par for the Curse is on iTunes and Amazon and I think wherever else TuneCore gets you out to. You can find both bands on Facebook as well, and some stuff on YouTube too.
Nice. You said the new Parish Lane will be out in March?
That's going to drop March 26th.
All right, cool. And then, yeah, so definitely give me a, you know, reach out to me around that time and give me a single, and I'll throw it on an episode of the podcast.
Absolutely.
All right, man. I appreciate you taking the time. Have a good night, man.
All right, thanks, Josh. You too.
All right, there you guys have it. The Talk to Me Super Bowl 50 preview episode. Thanks to Frank Navinick of Hatebreed, Yancey Turner of Parish Lane. Thanks, guys, for coming on. And if you want my pick for the Super Bowl, I'm going to have to go with my heart here. And sorry, Yancey, but I'm going to have to root for the Broncos in this one. I've got a lot of family members that enjoy the Broncos. You definitely hope to see Peyton Manning go out on top, and maybe he can ride off into the sunset with a Super Bowl ring on his finger. So definitely rooting for the Broncos. In my heart of hearts, though, I don't believe that the Broncos are going to win. I just think the Carolina Panthers are just way too stacked to go up against in this Super Bowl. And with, you know, Cam Newton firing on all cylinders the way he is, I just don't see it happening. But I'll be rooting for the Broncos and kind of expecting the Panthers to win. So I don't know if that has me on the fence in this one, but yeah. So guys, hit me up on Twitter at TalkToMeTalk, Facebook.com/TalkToMeTalk, and you can always email the show TalkToMeTalk@gmail.com. Let me know the picks that you guys have for Super Bowl 50. Let me know if you guys side with Frank or if you guys side with Yancey, and let me know what you guys think's gonna happen in this game coming up on Sunday. Hopefully you guys have a great week. Looks like next week my guest will be Michael Del Pizzo of Sunflower Dead. If you guys haven't checked those guys out, make sure to go online, check out their new song with Jonathan Davis, guest vocaling on their song, and the video for it is absolutely insane. It's animated, it looks crazy. You know, definitely a band that I've been hearing about a lot lately, and reached out to them, and I'm going to have them come on the podcast. The cover of their new album is a take on Kiss's Rock and Roll Over. So it definitely looks cool, man, and I'm really excited to get to talk to this guy, kind of hitting up the new breed of metal, the new people that are coming out. So yeah, so check out some Sunflower Dead this week. So next week when you hear Michael Del Pizzo, so you'll be a little bit more familiar with the band and the man behind the band. So yeah, vocalist of Sunflower Dead, Michael Del Pizzo, on next week. And for the Talk to Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey. You guys have a great week. Don't drink and drive at your Super Bowl party. Make sure to have a designated driver. Call an Uber. Do what you gotta do. Make it home safe so we can see everybody next Tuesday. Have a great week, everyone.